You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
If you're watching the Republican Tea Party talking heads this weekend, it was probably obvious that the Mitt team is experiencing what best can only be described as a quicksand moment. The Rince Priebus, the Karl Rove struggle to pull Mitt out of this 20 years of tax avoidance history looks like quicksand. They're sinking deeper and deeper into political quicksand. That's the only way you can look at this. Cliff, you there? I mean, how do you see this? It is one of those times when it's not getting better. Every time you hear a talking head go on and try to explain all this or call Harry Reid a liar, it is like quicksand, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, they want to try to just hope this thing will go away, and it won't go away because obviously there are legitimate concerns here.
Well, you know, if you think about this, Harry Reid has been characterized in his career as a senator who isn't cagey and crafty enough. I mean, that's the way you would think of him. He doesn't fight back. And that's the way he has been characterized in the past. And he certainly isn't cagey and crafty enough to fight back the dirty trick specialists who've been in control of the GOP since Richard Nixon engaged in his dirty tricks during the Watergate era. But truth be told, if you really think about it, Cliff, Karl Rove, Donald Segretti, Lee Atwater types, and those gotcha quicksand checkmate politic type moments, they don't have anything on Harry Reid here. He's lured Rove into a playing field that's covered with this trap. It's really a trap for Mitt and the GOP. It's really Harry Reid at his tactical best. I'm really proud to see what's happening.
Oh, I agree, and I am too. It's sort of like, you know, I said this recently when I saw some of the Obama ads mocking Mitt Romney, you know, and some of them were DNC and some of them might have been super PAC, but with Rafalka, the dancing horse, and with, you know, making fun of him about the Olympics and all the, and superimposing all the nations where he has his money and the rest. This is the kind of stuff that Republicans normally do, and it drives people like you and me nuts who sit here and watch Democrats sit and just sort of take it. 2004 being the best example of this. Where they lie and they use all sorts of racist themes and they use, you know, I mean, obviously they impugn someone's patriotism like John Kerry. And so now here you've got this guy where there are legitimate questions and Harry Reid has used what these guys have used falsely, quite truthfully against them, which is fine.
You know, it's a turnaround.
So he can keep mocking them.
It's a turnaround. I've got Cliff Schechter with me, best-selling author, and we're going to be talking about this throughout the show. You know, this isn't complicated. Reid has nothing to lose here. Harry knows that Mitt can't release 20 years or even 10 years of tax returns, and every time the public becomes aware that the Mittster and GOP and Karl Rove are struggling to avoid that, they sink further into this quicksand. Think about this. Think about this, Cliff. After just 1 year of Mitt's tax returns, just 1 year, we learned that he's been paying less than 14% in taxes, less than most Americans pay every year. We learned that. We learned that the way he's accomplished his low tax scam is by moving his money offshore to places like Bermuda and Grand Cayman and third world banana republics where there is no oversight. I mean, there are no regulators. Regulators don't function in a world other than a world of bribery or graft and corruption in places like that. So nobody asks questions. Nobody tells, nobody asks, and it's impossible without great investigators to find out where that money comes from or where it's moved. So with just 1 year, we've learned so much about why and how he's gone about paying little or no taxes. And the narrative now is that he's paid no taxes. And the problem with that is, his only answer is not to call Harry Reid a liar. Harry Reid is 76 years old. He's probably not going to run again. He was just reelected. There's no downside for Harry Reid saying, listen, Mitt, the reason we ask questions about your IRA, the reason we ask questions about the $102 million that you acquired in your IRA in less than 15 years, it's mathematically impossible. But the reason we ask questions about that is because you're not telling us, you're not showing us what we have a right to see. And as I look at this, Cliff, I mean, the public has become aware. They're focused on this incredible, simple truth that if Mitt and Bain Capital had nothing to hide. Why don't they simply put their money in American banks like the rest of us? I mean, it begs the question, did Mitt lie to the feds?
And look, it's undoubtable that if you want to look at it from a political standpoint, that it's working. For the last couple months, in about a dozen swing state polls, Mitt Romney has been behind in Pennsylvania and Ohio in every single one. I think he's been behind in Florida in 10 of 12 of them. Ever since the Bain attack started, and now on his personal taxes, which these are all obviously part of a broader theme about a guy who seems to have no economic patriotism, for lack of a better term, and you know, perfectly happy whether it's shipping other people's jobs abroad or his own tax money abroad, so he doesn't use it to for the betterment of this country, which is theoretically what we're all in here, the public commons.
I have Cliff Schechter with me, best-selling author, and you wrote your best book about McCain. Now here,
yeah.
This begs a question too. McCain saw everything. McCain was given all of these tax returns. He reviewed it all. He had to decide, do I want this guy to be my running mate, or do I want this character from Alaska, who nobody's heard of, to be my running mate? So after McCain reviews everything, he says, no, you know what? I'm going to go with Sarah Palin. Now, who is it that knows the most that could come forward? It's John McCain. McCain could say, look, I've read this. I've looked at it. He paid taxes. Reid is lying. He hasn't come forward and done that yet, because the truth is, I don't think they can release this material. And Harry Reid was brilliant in the way that he's put this on the table. The man has nothing to lose at this point. Harry Reid has nothing to lose. Mitt Romney has everything to lose. Every time Mitt Romney answers Harry Reid, it is as if he's looking down and he's having to answer somebody who's not running for president, who simply can say what needs to be said. And at this point, what I love about this, Cliff, is it's empowering the rest of the Democrats to get out there and say the same thing
that's
and keep
exactly
this issue
right.
alive.
One voice, you know, and that's always been the Democrats' biggest problem, is that one or two or a couple of loud voices of people who are articulate and willing to speak out can change a culture, can lead others to have the courage to stand up. And so I am waiting for those others now. I think you're starting to hear a little bit more of it, but I want to hear more voices with the strength of Harry Reid's voice. Again, this guy is not living up to not only his own dad's standard, he's not living up to the standards of any recent presidential nominee. He's not sharing any of his records with us. We already know, as you pointed out, he did all sorts of fishy things and found ways to pay, you know, 13.9% in his taxes, while people making $40,000 a year are paying, like, what, twice that? A lot more than that, anyhow. I don't know all the tax rates, but certainly more than that. And, you know, so in the end, there's nothing to be lost by this. He's doing something shady. The only question is what it is. And
okay, Cliff, let me, Cliff.
Well, you know, let's try and figure it out ourselves.
Cliff,
speculate a little bit.
Cliff, listen to me just a second. The problem is right now the water cooler talk everywhere has got to be, isn't it better to find out everything we can about this guy right now? Isn't it better to look at these deep, dark secrets right now before we vote for Mitt? Because after we vote for Mitt as president, who prosecutes Mitt for tax evasion if that's what we find? Who in a Mitt Romney administration is going to lead an investigation that would permanently brand Mitt Romney as a criminal? Nobody's going to do that. But right now, if you have this information out there, you have people like Nation Magazine, Salon.com, ProPublica, Mother Jones, Public Citizens, looking into it. That's what's important right now. And I have to tell you something. This is a problem for Mitt. Harry Reid made an excellent move. It is checkmate. I'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. It is media for the rest of us. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman today. On today's show, we have best-selling author Cliff Schechter. He's going to join us to talk about the news of the day, including Mitt Romney's less-than-stellar field of vice presidential candidates. Also, alternate senior writer Josh Holland is going to tell us what Mitt Romney might possibly be hiding in his tax returns. We can only guess, huh? Investigative journalist Brad Friedman, he's going to give us the latest on Florida voter purge. And John Nichols, Washington correspondent for The Nation, is going to talk to us about the shooting at the temple and what occurred over the weekend. Former Alabama governor Don Siegelman, he's going to tell us about his recent resentencing history. Right now I have Cliff Schechter on the phone with me. Cliff, as you know, is best-selling author, and he has the lowdown on Mitt Romney. The lowdown right now to me, Cliff, I don't know how we get – I don't want to move to his vice presidential candidate issue until we make it clear that, you know, every time I see a talking head come out and say, oh my God, Reid has made a terrible mistake. It's brilliant. It is checkmate. It is quicksand for the Karl Roves, because right now, at the end of the day, let's say Mitt decides to release this information. All Reid does is claps and says, well, thank you. That's all we wanted. But if he doesn't, it doesn't go away. And, right. And the problem that he's having now is you have voters, Cliff, that are just now waking up to all of this. And they're asking themselves, if he doesn't have anything to hide, if Bain Capital has nothing to hide, then why won't he do this? They also ask the question, why does a person put their money in offshore accounts if they don't have anything to hide? Look, Mitt needs to listen to his lawyers. He needs to listen to Bain Capital lawyers more than he listens to his campaign tacticians, because all of this is going to have a really unhappy ending if there is what people are speculating might be here. If he doubts it, he ought to give Johnny Edwards a call. Let Johnny Edwards talk to him about the idea. This doesn't just go away, Mr. Mitt. This doesn't just end because you want it to go away. This doesn't just go away because you feel like you have some royalty blood that permits you to do whatever the hell you want to do when you want to do it. And so how do you see this? How is this something that ever goes away from Mitt Romney? Even if he allows this material to be released, understand, what did we get with just 1 year of his returns? What are his options, Cliff?
I mean, I guess in the end, he doesn't really have any. You know, obviously, they've come to the conclusion that whatever's in there is so damaging or, frankly, illegal that they can't release these returns. And so, as you said, everybody should ignore these talking heads, because what Harry Reid has done, as you point out, is brilliant. He has nothing to lose. And in the end, it just puts Mitt so much on the defensive. He has to keep explaining this. And the Obama campaign, all those guys can drive this with earned media. They can put ads up about this, and it reinforces what we already know about Mitt Romney, the worst parts of the impression we've all gotten about him.
Cliff, let me ask you something. Isn't this a common sense analysis? If somebody is telling such a huge, unfair lie about you, don't you do everything possible to prove that what's being said about you is a lie? And it's being spread by an unscrupulous liar. That's what anybody out there around the water cooler is talking about. That's where Mitt and Rove and his political these political trash pack, that's where they have to gasp for the last breath of air, because that's what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to common sense. And that is, if somebody's attacking you and it's just an attack that is just completely a lie, you do what you have to do is you say, no, it's not. Let me show you that it's not. Hey, let's get a caller. I've got Joe in Mobile, Alabama. Joe, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you? Go ahead.
Doing good. Thank you very much. I was just wondering if either of you are familiar with or following up on the Rachel Maddow reporting she did on Friday about Mitt Romney's, repetitive nature here. He has been doing the same exact thing since running for governor.
Well, it does go back. It goes back. Yeah, it involves him running for governor for sure. But if you remember, there wasn't just a tax issue that was the issue when Mitt ran for governor. If you recall, with a period of 24 hours, he had actually moved a blind trust, a trust that was actually in his name, into the name of his wife. He did that because had he not, we would find out where a lot of his holdings were. And so from the very beginning, we're finding time after time, what he's done is he's tried to protect himself from something. We don't know what it is, but you can bet this. The executives at Bain Capital are very concerned about what's happening. Because you realize one of the attractions of what occurred with Bain Capital was, if you do business with us, we're going to go in and we're going to completely demolish a company. We're going to leverage the company out of existence. We're going to diminish their pension program. We're going to take the copper out of the wall. We're going to sell off the cars, and then we're going to pay ourselves a big bonus. And then once we do that and pay ourselves these big dividends, we're going to move them offshore to where nobody knows what happens with the money. Now, here's the problem, Joe. People only move money offshore for several reasons. A, They want to avoid taxes, not just avoid taxes. They want to evade taxes. The second reason is they want to move money around in places where it can't be traced, maybe with people that they shouldn't be moving the money around in. And of course, the most obvious thing is they know that if they disclose certain items about taxes, that we learn more and more and more. And that's what happened with him releasing the 1 year. We learned critical information. And if you put an investigative reporter on 20 years of tax returns, it is burn down time for a guy like Mitt Romney, because in order to make the millions, the $250, $300 million that we know about, he's had to make some promises about offshore banking and how you could evade taxes by putting money offshore. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. It is the media for the rest of us. I'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Now, Scott, as we...
All you gotta tell me now is wow, wow, wow.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. It is where despair is not an option. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. I have best-selling author Cliff Schechter with me, and we've been talking about the news of the day, and there is no way to ignore the fact that the news of the day is checkmate Mitt Romney. Checkmate. Harry Reid is doing exactly what a leader is supposed to do. And you know what? They can say the most dangerous man is one who doesn't care. Right now, if you think about it, Harry Reid has just won his reelection. Harry Reid is 76 years old. Harry Reid probably is not going to run again. And Harry Reid knows that it is time for the Democrats to man up and go after Mitt. They have him bleeding right now. They have him bleeding. The last thing they want to do is back off. Let's go to Vicky in Fort Lauderdale. Vicky, you there? Vicky in Fort Lauderdale. Vicky, are you there? All right, let's go to Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, you there?
I'm there, here, and you are the hardest working man in the in radio. And I appreciate you whenever you fill in and whenever you do your show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Not a problem. Here's the thing right here. No more Mr. Nice Democrats.
Right.
The hell with that. These people are fighting for keeps. They realize that right now, the Republican Party, what I like to call them, the party of the old white hypocritical party, are running out of time. And they're playing for keeps, not fair. And it's time for us to play hard politics. And I find it hypocritical and laughable that these people that run the Republican Party for the past 30, 35 years are the ones that's bitching and complaining and whining about hardcore politics. The one thing, the one caricature that they have of Barack Obama, the only one that's correct is Chicago politics, baby. And this is that. It's that you get your opponent and you crush them. This is right out of their playbook.
Carl, let me answer it. Here it is. Okay. First of all, we remember that they've come after President Obama as being a Muslim. They've said he wasn't born in the U.S. His birth certificate problem, that took hold. They know that thing takes hold. Remember when they went after Bill Clinton? They said Bill Clinton was somehow a Chinese spy. That took hold. Remember when they went after John Kerry and they said John Kerry actually wounded himself so they could do away with his hero status where it comes to contrasting him from the little shrub who was AWOL during Vietnam. So here's the point. Harry Reid understands that this does take hold. He understands that it takes hold. He understands that all he has to do is get his other Democrats motivated. And that's what he's doing. He's motivating the other Democrats to say, look, jump into this fight. We have Mitt Romney in a position that he can't answer what's happening. Somebody has looked at this, Carl, and somebody has said, we maybe we can weather the PR fight by not disclosing this. But we cannot, Mr. Mitt, weather some things that are in these tax returns. That's what's happened here. And as a result, if the other Democrats will do what they're supposed to do, and that is to man up and do what they're supposed to do, then we're going to find, you're going to find that this is something that will absolutely take hold. Cliff, you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, and let me just say, as somebody like you, Pap, who's been on this side of it so many times as a Democrat, I've sat and just said, you know, I remember in the year 2000 saying, oh, those pictures of George W. Bush when he was in high school in the cheerleader outfit are going to have to end up on TV. But they didn't, you know, mocking what a little prep school boy he was. And all the business failures he had where he had his thumbs up with the hard hat on, but the business would go kaput with all of his dad's friends' money. But we, you know, like the Democrats have just never played this hardball game. And to see it now, I'm just telling you, I'm just content. It's so nice to be on this side of it for once.
Well, listen, isn't it a question? You know, the question's even knocking around there. Did McCain say something to Reid? McCain looked at all these tax returns. McCain realizes that he's got to realize Mitt Romney is a train wreck. Mitt Romney can bring the entire Republican ticket down because he's a train wreck. Who is it that gave Harry Reid that information? You know what? America doesn't really care because it's not about that. It is about refocusing, putting this light in a situation where, you know, no matter how hard, no matter what they do, no matter how hard Karl Rove, you know, slumbers around in this thing, no matter how much money they spend trying to make this go away, they have methodically, Cliff, I think, they have methodically branded Mitt Romney as at the very least, an untrustworthy character, possibly even a shady character, possibly even a criminal. That's right. What they've done. Now, you know, I don't have much faith in the Democrats. I don't think they did it on purpose, but that's where we've landed now. And so if the Democrats have enough courage to keep it up, that's a good thing for them. Let me go to another caller. Let's go to Eric. He's in Houston, Texas. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, good afternoon, Mike. Hey, I totally agree with the premise of the Democrats. But see, I want to see the other Democratic senators. I want to see the congressmen. Just like we see the right wing on the same page at the town hall meetings, I want everybody calling out. I mean, if somebody asks you what the weather's going to be like, if you're a Democrat, bring up Mitt Romney and his taxes first, then give the weather. I don't do like Michelle Bachmann. No matter what question you ask her, she has an answer for you. Then she may get around to answering whatever it is you want. But just put it on autoplay.
Hey, Eric, you know what? Eric, you know, here's the deal. Democrats, the first Democrat that I hear come out and say, you know, pull an Ed Rendell and say, you know what? This is too harsh. The first Democrat that does that ought to be a target for every progressive in this country. They ought to be a target. Because right now, Harry Reid has put everything on the line. I've been, if you followed me over the years, I've been very critical of him from times, not having enough courage to stand in there and fight. Right now, he's doing exactly that. And you know what? It's almost impossible for them to spend this in a way that's going to be beneficial to them. And you know what? The numbers are showing it. Just look at the polls day by day. The numbers are showing this, aren't they, Cliff?
Yeah, they are. And it's not just that, too. When you know campaigning, they only have so many news cycles. And what the Republicans have always been so good at doing with the things like the Swift boat attack is not just hurting you, but also putting you on the defensive for so much time that you're not getting your message out. And that's what they've been doing to Romney. So beyond the actual damage to his brand, to him as a person, you know, all this stuff that Romney wanted to say about himself to start getting his story out before the convention, it's gone now.
You know what I would say to Mitt right now? I'd say, Mitt, it's better to lose the presidency to get out of this thing now and avoid a courtroom. And avoid a courtroom for your executives. Because if you don't think the Bain Capital executives are reeling right now, if you don't think they're huddled up in a back room saying, you've lost control of this problem, Mitt, you've lost control of being able to handle this problem, they're completely wrong. Let's go to Corky in Rochester, New York. Corky, you there?
Hello. Yes, I'm wondering where our friends on the right are. I mean, here's their chance to prove that Harry Reid is a big liar.
Right.
Here's your chance. And they're sitting back on their heels. They got to be screaming about this. Come on, you say he's a liar, you can prove it, yet you're not doing anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the heart of this. If somebody comes out, and I said this a minute ago, if somebody comes out and they say, look, you are a proven liar, and here's why I think you're a liar. If you have any sense at all, you're going to answer it immediately. You're going to avoid doing what John Kerry did, and that is not to answer this problem. You see, John Kerry allowed himself to be branded. He was branded so quickly that by the time it was over, we thought that the guy actually had wounded himself in the Vietnam era so he could get a medal. That branding is now taking place with Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is slowly and methodically being branded as a criminal. There's no way to dress that up. He is being branded as a criminal. Here's what people miss. This story of offshore banking has a lot of parts to it. One part is when you put your money offshore, they did an incredible study that came out of Europe several years ago. Here's what they found. They traced the money and they found out that much of the money was tied into things like guns trafficking, drug trafficking, human trafficking. It was tied into criminals who were trying to protect their money. Now, Mitt Romney, if he's put his money in one of these Banana Republic banks with that caliber of person, then we have the right to know that. He's not running for dog catcher. He's running for the president of the United States, the leader of a free world. That's what he's running for. And so people asking these questions right now, it really, really does matter. I can promise you. And they're not doing a very good job answering these questions. Give me a call, 866-987-8466. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom. Talk about what you want to discuss. But right now, if Democrats everywhere are not asking the question, okay, Mitt, okay, it's time to show your cards. If they're not asking that question, really, if Mitt's own people aren't saying, Mitt, what is your next plan? Because this one isn't working. And what you're doing, Mitt, is you are branding yourself. I've got Cliff Schechter, best-selling author, you know, just incredibly a writer who always catches the edge of political issues. So, Cliff, give me the political edge of this one. What are the moves? You remember what happened to Dukakis when he ran? He was in the tank with a ridiculous helmet on. And if I were to say to you, how would you characterize Jimmy Carter? You would probably think of that tank, those helicopters burning in the desert. Or if I were to say to you, what about Senior Bush? You would say, read my lips. There are some things that brand a candidate, and that's what's happening to this guy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And if the Democrats are smart, there's so much imagery that the campaign or the super PAC or the DNC can use. They would go forward with this theme of he's raising the rest of your taxes while lowering his. He won't even tell us what his taxes are. Did he pay them? And, you know, the images are just everywhere. Him on the jet ski, the car elevator, the big houses, you know. There's just so much they can do with this, and for the imagery and the commercials. The dancing horse, you know, they got a $77,000 tax write-off.
And, Cliff, you know when people start paying attention? August. They're paying attention now. It matters that Mitt Romney has a 30,000-square-foot home. Bless his heart. And it's got an elevator. Bless his heart. But Americans want to be able to relate to the person they're voting for. And they can't relate to a person who banks in places like Pango Pango. They are, you know, or has shell game kind of accounts all over the world that they don't explain. They can't understand. The typical American has their bank account right down the street. They have their checking account right down the street. Their ATM is right down the street. It's not in Switzerland. And so the problem is Mitt already has this personality deficit. His favorables have always been bad. Why? Because he's not likable. Now add to that, the guy has the brand of a criminal. And all of a sudden, all this starts looking bad. Let me go to this caller, Bud in Olympia, Washington. Bud, are you there?
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Hey, listening to you, it reminds me of the comment that Lindsey Graham mentioned a few weeks ago that the tax system that they created is a game, and then they can play it. So basically, if Romney spills or shows his tax returns, he's going to, like, rip the scab off of how the game is played.
Mm.
And it seems like people, like, the people that are for this kind of game, like Lindsey Graham, the friends of Mitt Romney, it's like opening up, uncovering a rock and watching the insects hit the daylight.
Everything's exposed. It is kicking over a rotted log, isn't it? You're kicking over a rock.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that. Now, let me see how this works. How is it that you put $102 million in your IRA, Mr. Mitt? How is it that you pay 13% income tax? How do you do that? All of a sudden, you have the silk sock, you know, you got the silk suit crowd up on Wall Street that are saying, wow, you know, Mitt, back off. You're showing too much about what we are.
Maybe you can get Lindsey Graham to explain the game of how Mitt Romney played it, and then we'll all be, you know, enlightened to the fact that, oh, either we can play it or we can't because we're excluded because we only make so much. But since we're excluded, it's okay for us to subsidize your lifestyle by the lack of taxes that you pay, and we have to pay and make up that difference.
But on so many levels, this is a winner for the Democrats. If Harry Reid continues what he's doing, he's not showing any sign of backing down. Pelosi came out the other day in support of him. They're doing what they're supposed to do, and that is, at last, thank God, they're manning up and they're saying, look, we can play, you know, we don't want to be Donald Segretti. We sure don't want to be Karl Rove the Turd Blossom. We don't want to be Lee Atwater. But you've forced us to play like this. And you know what? We can play gotcha politics, too. We can play checkmate politics. We can bury you in quicksand like you were able to bury Kerry and Gore. And we can do that, too, because now it's almost like these new faces have come up. This new brand of Democrat that says, I'm tired of showing up at a knife fight, a gunfight with a knife. I'm tired of that. And so all of a sudden, things are different. Cliff, are you seeing that evolution take place?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you brought up a very important point also earlier, which is the more you put Mitt Romney in this corner, he's so unlikable. You know, you brought up whether McCain shared information, who knows, but you found out after the last campaign that all of his rivals, all of them together, McCain, Huckabee, they all hated him. He just is such an unlikable guy. The way he responds to these things too, you challenge him on his horse. He's like, I have no idea when the horse is performing. So he sort of insults his wife to try to seem, he's so insecure. And I just think that these issues, you keep pounding him on them, he'll also make unforced errors and he'll hurt himself that much more.
One thing that keeps coming up too is, you know, there's so many reasons that people are speculating about what this, you know, what's happening here. Why is Mitt hiding this? As a matter of fact, I'm going to be talking to Josh Holland later in the program about what all those reasons have, what all that speculation is. Speculation about criminal activity, A, is no good for you. B, it can, you know, it can wreck your candidacy. But there are other issues. They're saying, is this something that has to do with him protecting trusts for his children? Is there something about the trust issues that are the problem? Is he protecting executives at Bain Capital? Does this somehow tie into the UBS investigation of the Switzerland UBS, where they were being investigated for tax evasion by hiding the names of people who were engaging in tax evasion? They paid $800 million because of that. Is Mitt's name in there? Well, we don't know. And that's the problem, Mitt. We don't know. And the American public isn't stupid, Mitt, and they want you to do what Harry Reid is telling you to do. Let's see the papers. Show us the money.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. It is where despair is not an option. I'm Mike Papantonio sitting in for Tom. Mitt Romney, well, he's been getting a lot of negative attention in recent weeks for his constant refusal to release years of tax returns, basically his refusal to be honest with the American public. And to make matters worse, his entire campaign has been put on the defensive by Harry Reid, telling the media, telling the public that sources have told him that Romney hasn't paid any taxes for at least 10 years. It has him scrambling around like crazy people. Join me now to talk about what Romney might be hiding in those tax returns, or really, what does all this mean? Is Josh Holland a senior writer, and he's an editor on Alternet, and just all-around very smart guy. Josh, this is being spun every way possible. Tell me what the iterations are.
Oh, there's so many. You know, I had to choose 10 theories that are running around about what's really in Mitt Romney's tax returns. What we know is that it must be so bad that he's made a calculation that it's better to deal with this kind of media onslaught, this media frenzy about it, for the entire length of the campaign than to actually come clean. So in the absence of any kind of release, any kind of disclosure about his finances, everybody and their cousin has speculated about what might be in there. So some of my favorite theories are, maybe he's, you know, the Mormons, they have to tithe at the church, like many different religions. And they're supposed to pay over 10% of their income to the Church of Latter-day Saints. There are two theories about this. One is that, and this was proposed by the Associated Press, was that they didn't want to show how much Romney is paying to the Mormon church, because there's a lot of evangelical voters in the base who believe that you know, Mitt is a member of a cult, and it's not really a Christian cult. And
in other words, what happens, Josh, is if you start talking about he gave 10% of his money to this church, as in, I can tell you, you know, I've been raised in the South all my life. If you don't believe a Southern Baptist thinks of it as a cult, they do. And
they
your
do.
Point is, what ends up happening is it just shines a light on it again.
That's one theory. The other one is that he undertithed the church. That, you know, he basically did not pay the 10%, and that this would anger Mormons. You know, there's, again, there's so many, many theories. I actually love the move that Harry Reid has made in stirring up this controversy about the idea that maybe he didn't pay taxes for 10 years. It's just such a great piece of, you know, it's typical hardball politics. There's nothing wrong with it. But I think that the thing that I find so entertaining is that it seems like the political press is so unaccustomed to seeing Democrats play tough that they're just freaking out over it.
And they don't know what to make of it, Josh. I agree. They don't. And other Democrats that have been around too long, they don't know what to make of it. I'll tell you, how about this? By the way, I love the article that you did, what Mitt Romney could be hiding in tax returns, because in there you lay out, these aren't your theories.
No.
These are theories that are knocking around out there that somehow Mitt has to answer. He has for example, right now, I love this theory that, you know, when he was governor, He was saying one thing in his Etch-a-Sketch kind of way, and now he has to say another thing. And some of the money that he had when he was governor, maybe he had to give to things like Planned Parenthood.
That's right. There may be individual deductions. This is another theory that's out there. There may be individual deductions to various liberal groups. One that I didn't include in the piece, again, I had to pick and choose to get to 10, was that maybe Mitt Romney, when he was the governor of Massachusetts, was not declaring himself as a resident of Massachusetts when he needed to be eligible for governor. So that would be in his tax returns as well.
Well, what about the mini Mitts? See, I understand this. I know you know what I do during my day job. I handle cases against the biggest corporations in the world, and I always see them playing these shell games, both for the corporation and for their personal lives. And I love the mini-Mitt theory. The mini-Mitt theory is he had to protect his five sons.
In 95, he set up this huge trust for his sons, and basically it's $100 million. Now, up until this year, there was a $1 million lifetime exemption on gifts so that you could give up to $1 million to your kids without paying any taxes. So that leaves $99 million that he was exposed, theoretically, to pay a gift tax on. And the idea that's floating around is that if we saw his returns, what we would find is that he had put assets in that trust and declared the value of those assets as maybe being zero, or maybe being very, 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 just a fraction of what they were actually worth on the open market. And then there's also the possibility, and this has been floated as well, that he didn't file a gift tax return at all.
Right.
So this would be ripping off Uncle Sam for something in the order of $20 to $40 million.
Right, because he put his base so low that you really can't extrapolate anything from. Look, I love these theories, but I really love James Wolcott. James Wolcott says, you know what? I don't think it has anything to do except with his entitlement. That here you have this arrogant character who doesn't think that he needs to answer to the help. He's never been used to answering to the help.
And we're the help, and so is Obama.
Right. We're the help, and we're saying, look, Mr. Wannabe President, isn't it important that we understand who you've done business with? You're going to be making decisions that involve our economy. Who have you had relationships with in these overseas banks? What kind of deals have you had? And Wolcott says, you know what? I don't think it has anything to do with except he has contempt for the process. He has contempt for people who might be asking him, you know, you kind of have to answer these questions, because he has, as you put in your article, there are two kinds of people. Himself and his family, and the help, and his arrogance.
You know,
he looks at
Wolcott's theory. I have to tell you, I think that Wolcott's theory is the most entertaining and also the least likely, because the amount of political damage he's suffering. You know, he has advisors around him. You would think somebody would say, "Look, if that were the case, if it were just a matter of contempt," because Wolcott's point is that he's been in such a bubble, surrounded by advisors who tell him how brilliant he is and how great he is all the time, that he just doesn't think that the ordinary people should have any kind of say over what.
But it is believable, though. You know, Josh, it is believable. That is, he does think of himself as a royalty of sorts.
Yes,
but he's afraid of other things, no question.
I think that there's real stuff in those tax returns. I mean, that's my point. I think that there's actually revelations in the tax returns that would, if not sink his candidacy, maybe that's expecting too much, but certainly do severe damage. Because I think that Romney is ultimately, again, a man who can do a cost-benefit analysis.
How do you stop the bleeding, Josh? I mean, really, I mean, we know the answer to stop the bleeding is you come up with the tax returns and there's nothing in them and there's no problem in them. And then all of a sudden, Harry Reid and the Democrats look like they've overplayed their hand.
Well,
but I just don't see that happening. I don't see that happening.
There is no way to stop the bleeding short of releasing the returns.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the fundamental position that Romney is in. And I need to point this out. It's not just Democrats. There is a laundry list of prominent Republicans now who have come out publicly and said Mitt Romney should release his tax returns.
Yeah.
So this isn't strictly a partisan issue. Of course, it's a partisan issue, but it's not just that. And, you know, that kind of pressure, that gives reporters the idea that there's blood in the water.
And it could be, let me just tell you, if you don't think this CEO issue, when was he a CEO of Bain? If you don't think that's important when you have him investing in Bain's decision to invest into Stericycle, which is, they aborted fetuses, you know, if you don't think your base is worried about issues like that, there are so many landmines here. Josh Holland, as usual, great work. Thank you for joining me. Keep up the good work because we need to know what the rest of this story is all about. I'm Mike Papantonio, 866-987-8466. Give me a call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Brad Friedman's going to be joining us soon, talking about the Florida purge. It all ties into Republican politics.
You can't hide your violent lies.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. It is media for the rest of us. I'm Mike Papantonio sitting in for Tom. Give me a call at 866-987-8466. And you know what, Mitt? There is no way to hide from this. I really, you know, haven't seen this play itself out so many times when we go to war with corporate America, with what I do. It never has a happy ending. And if there's a close personal friend to Mitt right now, what you're saying, Mitt, look, listen to your lawyers. Listen to Bain Capital's lawyers. Don't listen to the people that are running the campaign and trying to hustle you into presidency. Listen to your lawyers. Because it's better that you deal with it up front than to end up in a courtroom somewhere over this whole thing. Let's go to Alan in Seattle, Washington. Alan, you there?
Hi, Mike.
How are you, my friend?
Remember when Bush was president and he fired all of the attorneys at the IRS who were in charge of auditing wealthy people's tax returns?
Oh, yes.
Remember that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was
that
even
gave a green light for all the wealthy people to load up their tax returns with any deduction they could think of, legal or not. I'll bet that is why Mitt Romney cannot release his tax returns.
Well, it was even more insidious than that, Alan. What he did was he not only understaffed the IRS, he basically mandated. He said, look, quit picking on these people. These are the job creators. This is part of the trickle-down process. How dare you ask tough questions of these people? Go ahead and look at somebody who's making $30,000 a year. We don't care if you audit them, but don't audit the top 1%. And then the next thing he did is he also fired so many of the people with the U.S. Attorney's Office. And he said, we don't need all of these prosecutors. We don't need people looking into things that we might not want to see. And that was really unfortunate, but I got to tell you something. That is what happened. And there were a lot of people who figured, well, this is a good time to run with the money. This is a good time to move money offshore and do the kind of things that Bain Capital did. one thing that Bain Capital did, and you can't lose sight of this, when they went out and they tried to get investors, when they went, Tom Hartman tells the most incredible story. I mean, that came out early on. I think it, the first time it came out was on Salon.com. Was with who were his investors in Bain Capital? He was sent to South America to get some really, really sleazy looking investors. That when you follow the money on it, you go, well, who are these people? And one thing he did is he told these investors that if we take your money, we're going to put it offshore. And if you put it offshore, we're going to put it in places like banana republics where there is no regulation, where I can't send any, the U.S. can't send prosecutors over there. They can't investigate it. We're going to send it offshore and we're going to protect you that way. That was part of the, that was part of the sellability of what Mitt Romney was doing. And so anytime a good investigator gets just an edge on a story like that, we can learn an awful lot about what the real history was. And that's what the guy's afraid of. Let's go to Mark in San Francisco. Mark, you there?
Mike, a big fan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I just want to bring up the fact that they broke down Romney's tax plan, and it's $2,000 tax increases for a family and $5 trillion in tax cuts for the rich.
Hey, Mark, is that a surprise? I mean, those numbers are, I saw it, those numbers are staggering. Run it by the listeners one more time, just in case they didn't catch that.
$2,000 increase in taxes for a family, $5 trillion in tax cuts for the rich.
Only in America in 2012 could a candidate say, this is what we want to do.
Because, and you know what? It's in our face. It's right there in your face. This Romney and the Republicans and these teabaggers, they want to transfer wealth from us, the poor and the middle class, to the rich. That's all they're in business for, Mike.
Well, they are in business, and I think you hit it on the head, Mark. They're in business, and we forget that. See, in order for that 1% to be able to sell America on things that are just completely run contrary to the interest, they had to make it sound like the average American was on their side. So what they did is they phonied up a bunch of organizations. One organization they phonied up were the teabaggers. And all of a sudden, the media, totally incapable of asking meaningful questions, totally incapable of looking behind the story, for 2 years had never figured out that it was the top 1%, it was the wealth class, that was financing the teabaggers. So now they put the teabaggers out front to say, you know, it doesn't bother me that Mitt Romney is hiding his taxes in his financial history. It doesn't bother me. We want wealthy people to do well in this country, because if wealthy people do well, it all trickles down to us and we're going to be better off for it. We all know that's nonsense. We all know exactly that it almost burned down our economy. We know that. But what we don't know, and what the media seems brain dead to be able to cover, is organizations like the teabaggers are put out front to make it look like they're one of the Mitt fans, and that it's okay if Mitt doesn't pay his taxes. And it's okay if we give more money to the wealthy and take more money away from the middle class. You got to have the teabaggers to do that. And that's why they've spent so much time and money putting that organization together. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman, 866-987-8466. Give me a call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm going to have Brad Friedman with me when I come back. We're going to be talking about how far the Republicans have gone to stop voting in this country. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. The Republican Party understands that Mitt, he can't get to the White House without winning the state of Florida. Even if he wins in Florida, it's not a guarantee he's going to win the election. But the path to victory is paved right through the Sunshine State. And that's why our Republican governor, Rick Scott, is working around the clock to make sure that minorities and elderly and college students don't vote in this election. He doesn't want them at the polls. And we have people, thank goodness, in this country that cover stories like that day to day when mainstream media doesn't. When mainstream media is acting like this is not a story, we have people like Brad Friedman who understand it is the heart of democracy that's at stake here. Brad, look, I'm down here with Rick Scott. We know what the man's history is. I mean, you know, this is the same guy who had to plead the Fifth Amendment 78 times because he couldn't answer the question as to whether or not he conducted criminal activity when he was chairman of HCA that stole $1.7 billion from the American public. So he's the hitman. He's the henchman in Florida who's been asked to make sure, whatever you do, make sure minorities don't show up, make sure elderly and college students don't show up.
Well, his company was found to have been guilty of the largest fraud in Medicaid history. So do you suspect that stealing a few votes here and there is going to be any skin off of his back?
Yeah.
That's exactly what they had been trying to do. Now, we've got some good news here because, you know, I always come on and everybody, you know, is just so depressed after I finish talking to you, but the good news here is, by and large, I think, down in Florida, his attempt to remove thousands of legal voters that he was claiming to be non-citizens from the rolls has, by and large, been stopped. That's the good news. The bad news is, because of the way they went about it and because of the unbelievably lazy mainstream corporate media out there, you know, a lot of people, I spoke with some reporters over the weekend, a lot of people are under the impression somehow that Rick Scott actually won this case, that he was actually able to move forward despite the DOJ, the Department of Justice, trying to block him from his efforts that, you know, imperiled the votes of tens of thousands of Floridians down there.
Yeah, what they missed was the Department of Justice didn't give up. You understand, Judge Hinkle, who's a very – by the way, this judge in the Northern District of Florida is very, very talented. 11th Circuit trial judge, very talented judge. He made the correct decision when he made a decision, and he said, what you've brought to me, Justice Department, does not allow me to stop Rick Scott from doing what he wants to do, which is to prevent minorities from voting. This is the same judge, I want to point out, though, that just weeks earlier had turned the entire Republican effort to stop voter registration. He turned that up on its head and said, I'm not going to allow you to do that. So then he said, just bring me the case. And now the Department of Justice is bringing the case, and Rick Scott's hands are kind of tied, aren't they?
Well, what they did was, you know, the DOJ sued them to stop this so-called non-citizen voter purge, since it included so many people who were actually citizens and who were going to lose their right to vote unless they could prove within 30 days that they were actually citizens. So you had, you know, 93-year-old World War II heroes suddenly forced to get themselves to an administrative hearing and prove that they were allowed to vote. Now, what happened just before the trial is that the state of Florida essentially came in and said, okay, you caught us. We're not going to do this purge anymore. Now, the DOJ had been seeking a restraining order, temporary restraining order.
Right.
And the judge looked at the case and said, well, the state has conceded they are not going to continue with this purge as is. Therefore, there's no reason to give you this restraining order. Nonetheless, the media went out and reported this as state of Florida wins.
Yeah.
They can continue their voter purge.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
those were actually the headlines.
It is part of the brain dead mainstream media. It was almost like, I don't know if you caught the Sunday shows when you had the Republicans talking heads out front saying that Reid was lying about tax returns. That he was lying and he was making all this up. No, not one time did the people asking these talking heads, these Republican apologists, not one time did these so-called professional media insiders ask, well, golly, have you seen the returns yourself? How can you call Reid a liar if you haven't seen him yourself? Priebus wasn't even put on the spot at all about that issue. So this is the media. This the, my point being, Brad.
Yeah.
This is the media that you're having to replace. There is no traditional media that tells these stories. Brad Blog tells the stories. Mother Jones tells the stories. You know, you have a lot of sources that tell the stories. Tom tells the stories, but mainstream media is dead. And this is in something like voting rights. It's just too important. They can't die. Somebody has to tell these stories.
You have to go looking for the real answers. If you count on the mainstream media, I mean, what this has allowed, what happened in Florida, and the mainstream media just completely screwing the pooch on reporting this story, has allowed, for example, the state of Colorado today. I saw a press release from their terrible Tea Party Secretary of State claiming that, oh, we've got thousands of non-citizens here in Colorado, too. We're going to do the same thing they did in Florida. But the truth is, we actually went about trying to verify the claims that was being made by Governor Rick Scott down in Florida, by his Tea Party Secretary of State down there, Ken Densler.
Right, Densler.
And what we found is that for all of these tens of thousands of non-citizens that they claimed were on the Florida voting rolls so far, they have found exactly 9 that are confirmed to be non-citizens.
And so, what, 180?
None of them voted out of 11.2 million on the voting rolls. 9 people, no voters.
Tom, Tom covered this story, I think, when it broke. Some people did. But the fact, you had the Republican chairman of the state of Florida, Jim Greer. Now, you covered this story. Actually, you covered this story long before Jim Greer's deposition was taken. But understand, this was the right-hand henchman for Jeb Bush. This is the guy that came up through the Jeb Bush years, you understand. And he comes into office, and he has to admit, sworn in deposition, sworn under oath, he has to admit that it was the goal of the Republican Party to come up with a system that prevented minorities from voting. We don't want Hispanics to vote in Florida, and we don't want African Americans to vote in Florida. Now, this is Jim Greer, who had to admit to this in a deposition, and he said, there's no secret anymore. This is what we're doing in Florida, and there's no secret about any other state where this has taken place. It just so happens that every place it's taken place, you have a Republican governor, and generally you have a Republican legislature.
Yeah, I mean, he said as much under oath that it was about keeping the black vote, keeping black voters from being able to cast their vote. He said that under oath. And the media needs to report these issues as exactly that, voter suppression. There's this big fight, and I know you got to get to a break, but maybe we can do it after the break, but there's a big fight going on where Mitt Romney came out over the weekend and blatantly lied about what is going on in Ohio, and this notion that the Obama administration is trying to keep military voters from being able to cast their vote. It's a complete lie. They know it. Even people on the right know it. But, you know,
that's their game.
It's about lying.
Karl Rove always has the idea of let's deconstruct reality. Karl Rove and Lee Atwater started that. And their idea of deconstructing reality is to say, what is it that we're under attack about? For example, right now, we're under attack about the fact that we are trying to stop people from getting to the polls. We want to make sure that people cannot vote. Okay. Karl Rove sees that, and the little turd blossom takes that and tries to turn it around on Obama, as if Obama is trying to do the same thing. And the point is this. Here again, mainstream media is dead. Mainstream media is incapable of understanding the backstory here and asking the tough question. Look, Feeney. You know who Feeney is down here in Florida, right?
I'm Feeney. Yeah.
Tell me about how evil this character is, and I want to pick up with exactly how he's part of the big plan nationally.
Well, you know, Tom Feeney is a guy I've been reporting on now going on a decade at this point. He's, thank God, no longer in Congress, but he was for years, and he had been prior to that, a very close friend of the Bushes. He ran for lieutenant governor with Jeb Bush back in 1998 in his first failed run for governor down there. And I've been reporting, as you know, on a whistleblower for, like I say, almost a decade by the name of Clint Curtis, who had been a Republican computer software programmer down there, who said in an affidavit back in 2004 that Tom Feeney had come to him, come to his company, and asked them to create vote rigging software back prior to the 2000 election.
Again, in Florida. Everything centers in Florida.
To flip the vote in South Florida. That was, according to this sworn affidavit from Clint Curtis, what Tom Feeney wanted
Brad,
to do down there in Florida.
Stay with me. We'll come back next segment and pick this up. The story's almost not believable, but it's happening before our eyes.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. We'll have Brad Friedman back when we return. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio sitting in for Tom. Got Brad Friedman. The story is simple. Here it is. The story is the demographics in the United States are turning on the old gray, white, teabagger Republicans. It's happening in the South. You have the demographics changing. You have African Americans that are increasing in numbers, Hispanics increasing in numbers. That's in places that have been Democratic hellholes, that have been totally red states, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, Louisiana, North Florida. Those areas have been easy pickings for Republicans in the past. But now the demographics are changing, and they understand that this election matters because if they don't win this time, the next four-year cycle, the demographics will make the Republican Party irrelevant. Now, many of you may think that they're irrelevant already. I think they're irrelevant already because they're no longer the Republican Party. They are now the Teabagger Party. But they have to hold on this time because if they don't, they probably can't overcome four more years. Brad, what's your take on it?
Well, they know, especially with the candidate that they have this year, they realize that they're going to have a hell of a time winning this race. And it's not just, keep in mind, it is not just at the presidential level. These laws that they're attempting to enact to suppress the Democratic-leaning vote will have effects not just at the presidential level, but at the congressional level, the Senate level, and even the local level. That's why these laws are so important for them to pass.
But
and
they're desperate, Brad.
The very core of our democracy and the bargain.
Got Brad Friedman from Brad Blog with me. They are desperate, Brad. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. They're desperate. They're so desperate. You were telling the story about the Feeney story, the Greer story, the Florida story, about how the Republicans have got to win this election and how they're going to use everything possible to make sure they can game the system.
Well, this has been, you know, this has been going on a long time, certainly down in Florida. The story that I wrote about back in 2004, you actually had Tom Feeney admitting at that time that they were attempting to suppress the black vote in South Florida, that they were going to, that they were using exclusion lists, that they had, they were planning on having armed police to shave off another 25% of the black vote, according to the sworn affidavit. So it's nothing new, but it's sort of, you know, getting to a peak here. It's a zenith of voter suppression in 2012. And one of the things that they cannot do, that they cannot let people know, speaking of how bad the mainstream media is, you know, you'll hear Mitt Romney on this tax issue talking about the fact that, I've already turned in 1 year of taxes in 2010. I'm going to turn them in 2011 as well. But here's what you don't hear from the media as they let him say that. The fact is he hasn't turned in his taxes for 2010. He has withheld his local taxes, his state taxes for 2010. Nobody is pointing this out, I think, except for pretty much Bradblog.com, because I believe that those estate taxes will show that, in fact, Mitt Romney himself, the GOP standard bearer this year, is a voter fraud criminal. the very thing they're pretending the Democrats have done. Their own GOP nominee this year appears as if he committed voter fraud back in 2010 when he pretended that he lived in Massachusetts in January of 2010 for the special election between Scott Brown and Martha Coakley. Yeah. But in fact, he was registered from his son's unfinished basement. He did not own a house in the state of Massachusetts until July of 2010. Now,
well, let me ask you,
reason enough not to release his tax returns from 2010, because otherwise, how do you justify all of these other ridiculous laws they're trying to put through?
But Brad, your point is that if the media can't deliver the story, then in the average, you know, I think there is a trend now. The average American is going to things like the Brad Blog and Nation and Tom Hartman and you know, Ed Schultz. They're going to these shows and they're actually getting the truth. But the people who aren't, it's easy to say to them something that you know is an utter lie, and it rolls off of Mitt Romney's mouth just like it is the truth. Now, before we took a break, mm-hmm. You were talking about one of those huge lies. You were talking about Curtis. You were talking about mm-hmm. what was happening in Florida with the Curtis's claim under penalty of perjury in a 2004 mm-hmm. affidavit of just how far the Republicans are going to try to game this election.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. And you know, at the time that I reported that back in 2004 and that Tom Feeney, a sitting congressman, had asked him to create vote rigging software for the electronic voting machines, you know, there was a lot of doubters out there. There was a lot of skeptics. By the way, I was one of those skeptics. I have been trying to find holes in that story year after year. So far, I'm unable to find any holes. All I'm able to find is information that backs up the claim that that Clint Curtis made. And here we are, almost 10 years later, with yet another high-ranking GOP official from the state of Florida confirming yet again under oath that the Republican Party of the state of Florida is actively trying to keep black voters from being able to cast their legal vote. That's what's going on. Now, where is the DOJ? Where are the investigations? Why aren't people being held to account for this in Florida and all of these other states where it's happening, by the way?
Well, you know, Brad, here's what's frustrating to me.
What they need to do.
Bobby Kennedy and I and you and so many people, we've been talking about this for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. The Department of Justice was listening to this discussion and ignoring it. And now they're scrambling around all over the country to try to stop it. And you know what? They may get some breaks, but the Republicans don't need that much of a margin to pull this election. And that's the problem. That's what Republicans are counting on right now. I'm Mike Papantonio. Give me a call, 866-987-8466, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Mike.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. This past week, we saw another act of violence in America, but unlike the Aurora Theater shooting a few weeks ago, this weekend's shooting appears to be politically motivated. It's hate motivated. It's motivated by the very kind of hate that we hear from people like Michelle Bachmann almost every day now. It is where hate has become the brand of the new Republican Party and the new Teabagger Party. It is where we sell hate. And when you sell hate, what ends up happening is we objectify everybody we disagree with. We make them into objects that allow us to go in with an AR-15 or an AK-47 and kill them. Because that hate talk flows from the top of the GOP. it flows from the top of the teabagger movement. And what's happening in this country, it's no surprise. What happened this weekend is no surprise. John Nichols is with me from Nation Magazine. He's followed these hate stories a long time. And now, John, I want to speak for you, but I got to tell you something. I followed them too. And every time I hear one of these stories, I think of Nywert's book called The Eliminationist, where Nywert has the theory that once we can objectify people that we're afraid of, once we can objectify people that we've been taught to hate, then we can do the kind of thing that we saw happen at this temple.
I think you're getting into something that's really important here. And let's begin by reminding people that that we do have one of the clearest cases that we've had in recent times. You know, so often there's a debate, you know, was the shooter involved even peripherally with some extreme groups? Is there any connections? People debate it and talk about it. Here there's no real debate. The federal authorities on the ground are saying they're looking into a host of white supremacist connections. The Southern Poverty Law Center has put out a bulletin that details the alleged shooter's long-term involvement with white power rock groups, and, you know, interviews that he did with magazines. So, you know, we've got something that's very, very clear here. And I think it takes us to an important place, because we often, you know, come out of something like this and say, oh, we've got to think about our language. We've got to think about, you know, how we vilify folks. And that's all very legitimate. But the other thing I would suggest, Pat, is that we have a constitutional crisis in America. And the constitutional crisis is this. The founders of the American Republic, certainly the most enlightened of them, established religious freedom, genuine religious freedom, not the kind of stuff that Michelle Bachmann or some, you know, right winger talks about as a spin or a talking point. But Thomas Jefferson, when he outlined concepts of religious freedom in America, he fully understood that it involved a great diversity of religions, great pluralism of religions. He wrote about Muslims and Hindus and other religions.
He studied the same quality of study maybe that Houston Smith from Berkeley, you know, Houston Smith and Wisdom Traditions. He actually studied the religions as much as a guy like Houston Smith might have.
Absolutely. In fact, I've been to what remains of his library at the Library of Congress. There are Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist texts. I mean, this man was a remarkable figure in this regard, and he thought that we as a country would benefit from a broad pluralism. He wanted it to be absolutely clear that this was not merely a Christian country. So that was one part of it. But the other part, which is so important, Pat, as regards our discussion right now, is his understanding of what religious freedom meant. It meant the freedom to practice your faith, to worship without fear of violence, intimidation, or threats. Well, the Sikh community in America, since 2011, and really if you trace it back since the first Gulf War, because of the way they dress, because they publicly express their faith in head coverings, in a long beard, has experienced monumental levels of violence, murders, assaults, bullying, and then, of course, now what we see yesterday. And this raises a fundamental question. As important as a lot of the other questions that we tend to talk about as regards to the Constitution. Do we have religious freedom in a country where a pluralistic, nonviolent, really very attractive religion in so many ways can be so threatened on such a regular basis?
Here's Mark Potok, for example. You mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Potok has probably followed this rise of hate as much as anybody in America. And when I asked Mark, I said, what is it? What's different now? And he says that the people who were supposed to understand the Constitution,
right,
the very people who were supposed to empower us to follow the Constitution, when we have a Michelle Bachmann that is out. Now, she may be talking about Muslims, And, you know, her issues have about most, but this man probably, there was no distinction. What he saw was otherness. What he saw was otherness. These people aren't Muslim, but he saw otherness. And Potok says it all flows from the top nowadays, that it's all coming from the voices that are supposed to be our political leaders. It used to be, John, that we only had the freaks. The real creep shows that would talk like you hear our politicians talking every day. When I say politicians, I mean the right-wing teabagger GOP politicians or the hate talkers, the Glenn Becks, the Rush Limbaugh. It all flows from the top. First of all, these people are extremely extremely impressionable. You know, a lot of these people that the hate talkers are talking to read and comprehend on a 6th to 7th grade level. So they first of all have to make sense of what they're being told, and then they're being told every single day, John, that otherness is bad, that if they speak differently and they look differently and they don't follow your religion, then they're bad. And so we understand how this happens, and especially when it comes all the way to the top, like people with like Michelle Bachmann.
Well, and they create – I think you're right about so many of these things, but let's take it a step deeper. They create a fantasy about America. So that people who admittedly may have some mental health problems and may have, you know, all sorts of challenges, but people who want to think of themselves as patriots are told that America was founded as some sort of fundamentalist experiment, you know, which it just wasn't founded as. That's not who we are. It is not patriotic at all to preach that one religion stands above others. That is not what the founders.
John, what's so disturbing to me is we are not evolving. You see,
we are devolving.
We are devolving. This is a conversation that never would have been held 30 or 40 years ago. A Michelle Bachmann would never even been given a microphone 40 years ago. The media would have had enough sense to understand that a Michelle Bachmann is a dangerous character for the very kind of thing that happened at this temple. Because the media had enough sense to understand how all these parts fit together.
Let's tell you just how deep the devolution is. Now, and you know, remember, we've had extremist politicians. We always have. And they've existed in the past. So it's not that we as a people even seek to silence them. They have a right to speak. This is a country that has a diversity of voices. But in the past,
I'm sorry, John, we're out of time.
Gotcha.
866.
Call these people out.
Yes, 987-8466. I'm Mike Papantoni. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. When you come back, I'll take your calls. 866-987-8466. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. First of all, let me say to the callers, thank you. Thank you for holding. We've just had so much material to cover today. You've been very patient. I appreciate it. And I'm going to go to one of those callers right now. Let's go to John in Minnesota. Thank you, John, for holding. You still there?
Yes, yes. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask the question about Michelle Bachmann. She is a member of the Permanent Select Committee on the Oversight of the CIA. So these accusations that she's throwing at, I think it's Yuma Abedin, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, and Keith Ellison, who is my congressman, you know, there's not a shred of evidence there, but that's going to cost probably the taxpayer quite a bit of money because they will be forced to actually take her accusations or her complaints seriously and try to investigate these people. Is that going to happen? And if indeed, you know, there is no evidence of her accusations, it's totally irresponsible. Is there any kind of remedy that her fellow congressman can take against her to censure her, because frankly, I think she's just a joke. I mean,
yeah. Well, let me answer the question. First of all, yes, there is. It takes courage to do that. It takes somebody who's so outraged by Michelle Bachmann antics. Understand, this is the same Michelle Bachmann who has a huge problem with the truth. If you remember, she's the one who was promoting the idea that President Obama had FEMA concentration camps all over the country, that he was going to put teabaggers and Republicans in. She's the same Michelle Bachmann that made up this fantastic lie that was completely, it was just utterly taken out of the air, where she said that the president was spending $30 million a day to go on one of his trips that he had to make to India. So, I mean, as we listen to Michelle Bachmann, we have to understand what we're dealing with here. There is no tinfoil hat story that's been created that she hasn't bought into. So at some point, the people who sit right next to her in the House, they have to say, Michelle, you've gone too far this time. This isn't cute anymore. What you are doing is you're stirring up hate, and you know you're stirring up hate, and there are consequences to stirring up hate. But in order to do that, it has to be somebody that has the courage to do it. Anybody can bring the process. They have the right to bring the process. Now, it may not get anywhere, but if you're sitting next to this moon bat like Michelle Bachmann, and every time the crazy right wants to unleash their flying monkeys, they call on Michelle Bachmann, and you see it time and time again. At some point, don't you say, gee, you know, we probably ought to do something about that. Let's go to Tony in Long Island. Are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, my remark was basically situated not only towards Michelle Bachmann, but basically towards congressmen in general. When somebody makes such incredulous remarks, such as stating that individuals such as these are either involved with terrorist organizations such as the Muslim Brotherhood without any basis in fact, should not the Congress themselves be censoring these people? I mean, these individuals are basically being hired by us and to represent the rule of law. And when they go totally against the grain by not representing the rule of law, by saying something so incredulously unfactual, why are not our congresspeople not going against these individuals? Because this is literally an abuse. I mean,
Tony,
I'm all for the First Amendment, but this is a literal abuse of the First Amendment right.
Of course.
In my opinion.
40 years ago, you had statesmen. You had people who walked the halls of Congress who were statesmen. Now the process has been dumbed down to the point to where when Michelle Bachmann makes the statement that Obama has a plan of taking UN troops and bringing them over here to America to take our guns, 40 years ago, that would be the end of her career. In America today, with anti-intellectualism so strong, to where you have places like Texas where it breeds that kind of anti-intellectualism. That's, you have the hate talkers that come from various parts of this country. And it's the same thing, the same place, the same voices, the same message again and again. 40 years ago, this would have been stopped in its tracks. But the truth is, we have been dumbed down to the point to where mainstream media listens to a woman like Michelle Bachmann or Sarah Palin, or they actually have Ann Coulter on Sunday talk shows. Now think about that. Ann Coulter, the very woman who said that the widows of 9/11 were basically accused them of being whores. I mean, that she all but came out and said that. Said that they were taking advantage of their dead husbands. Or that we should, or the Ann Coulter who said that we should invade all the Muslim countries and take their children and raise them as Christians. This is a woman, understand, who is on Sunday talk shows on major networks in this country. So it's no surprise that Michelle Bachmann is the darling of the GOP. They don't want to censure her. They want to embrace her. That's what they have become. They have become a party of hate. And hate sells to ignorant people. And right now in America, we have an American public reading and comprehending on a 6th to 7th grade level. And hate is a big selling product. And a woman who can deliver that, well, I got to tell you, she's a valuable commodity to the GOP teabagger party. So somebody ought to ask to censure her, but it's not going to be her fellow Republicans. Hell, she's one of them. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman, 866-987-8466. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Don Siegelman will be with me when I return. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman.
Now all the criminals in the coats and the ties are free to drink martinis and watch the sunrise. While Reuben sits like Buddha in a 10-foot cell. An innocent man in a living hell. Yes, that's the story of the hurricane. But it won't be over till they clear his name. And give him back the time he's done.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom this week. Last Friday, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman appeared before court. He was hoping to have his sentence commuted, but instead he was sentenced to another 78 months in prison. Don's been fighting for his freedom for more than half a decade after he was named as a political target. Inescapably, that's what happened. Karl Rove's political target, a target of the GOP machine. He joins me now to talk about the ordeal he and his family have been through over the years. Governor, thanks for joining me. When I hear that Dylan song, it reminds me of what's happening here.
Well, thank you. It's become, Reuben Carter has become one of my heroes, along with our friend Nelson Mandela. But I don't put myself in the category of either of those two. But for those of you who are listening who may not remember, I was. It's the most recent episode started with my effort to be reelected governor, and I think what started as a political dirty trick by Karl Rove and his best friend in Alabama, Bill Canary, whose wife at that point was a U.S. attorney, it has changed now into an important political decision or legal decision that impacts politics as we know it.
One thing I wondered as I watched this whole thing, and of course you and I have talked about this over the years, Don. You've appeared on Ring of Fire and a couple of shows that I've done, and we've talked about this. The people who have kept up with this story understand that this is a story that Scott Horton, followed. You had some great reporters that followed this story because what they understood was that this had the ugly thumbprint of Karl Rove all over it. Everywhere from the fact that the first time this case was presented, you had the federal judge Clemens that dismissed it because he thought it was absurd. He thought the prosecution had not established a case at all. So then they shop around and then they find the judge who will do it. The judge who will say, yeah, I'll listen to this, who really should have recused himself, and that's Judge Mark Fuller, U.S. District Judge there in northern in Alabama. So the people who have followed this case, now we're at the place where you've said, okay, I fought my fight. There's really nothing more I can do. Let me begin my sentencing. What led you to that? I mean, you were out. Of course, you had a Supreme Court that was unwilling to take your case. They were unwilling to review your case. But you felt like your options were over at that point, right?
Well, not totally. And let me tell you why. I mean, we were very close to exposing the political origins of the case back when John Conyers was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. We had sworn testimony from a Republican lawyer that she was hired by Karl Rove to do an investigation of me and try
Dana Simpson. You talking about Dana Simpson, Dana Jill Simpson?
Yeah, exactly.
Tell the listeners about the affidavit that she actually created. She actually created an affidavit where she told the story about Bill Canary and Karl Rove getting with the Justice Department to try to prosecute you before anything.
People might ask, well, why would they even be interested? Well, our story actually starts in 1992 after the Bush-Quayle defeat, Bill Clinton's elected, and Karl Rove and his good buddy Bill Canary moved to Alabama from Texas, and they opened their political business in Alabama. They began to do for the Alabama Supreme Court what they did for the Texas Supreme Court. Both of them end up marrying girls from Alabama. Bill Canary married a girl named Laura,
Well, let's go person to person. Tell us really quick, Laura Canary. What has her involvement been in this?
Well, that she was the prosecutor, the U.S. attorney approved by Rove, appointed by Bush, who kicked this thing into high gear in 2001, 2002.
And let me add to this what I know is you had other prosecutors saying this is ridiculous, that this is the fact that you're using taxpayer money to go forward with this is ridiculous. And these were lifetime experienced prosecutors who said, we know what's going on here. We know that this is a political prosecution. But nevertheless, this was Canary's wife. Right.
Well, it's even worse than that. While she was investigating me and bringing my indictment, her husband was running my opponent's campaign against me.
Right.
Of course, when we found that out, we asked the Justice Department to force her recusal. There was some hanky panky, done there, and she said she recused, but she, continued to be involved in the case up to the point of even suggesting that the attorneys that she had appointed get a gag order to keep me from talking about the political origins of how this thing got kicked off.
But Don, let me mention something here. I think it's critically important. Listeners have to understand. You understand this woman Simpson had gone on the record under the risk of perjury and said that she had overheard GOP operatives discussing the idea that the Justice Department would take care of Siegelman. Now, surely part of that could certainly be construed as hearsay testimony, but there was other ways to get it in the trial. And Simpson's affidavit wasn't admitted into trial at all. And everything about Simpson's affidavit was clear. Now, understand, this is a Republican operative at one time. This woman is not a diehard Democrat. She was a Republican operative, a lawyer who had worked for the Republican Party, and she's going out on the record and saying these things with nothing to gain. And the judge in that case, Mark Fuller, would not even permit even parts of that testimony for the jury to hear. Is that right?
Yeah, we also subpoenaed the financial records of the NRC and the Republican Governors Association to prove that Abramoff was funneling Indian casino money into Alabama to defeat me and to defeat the lottery and also to defeat me again in 2002. Subsequently, of course, he published his book and said that he had funneled $20 million into Alabama and that I was his top political target, that they had to stop me.
Right. And in order to understand this story, Don, all you need to do is take a look at the movie Casino Jack, and you'll understand that Jack Abramoff was going after you because he was representing Indian tribes that wanted you to go away.
And I wanted to introduce gaming into Alabama, first the lottery and then casinos, because I believe that, that we were getting taken for a ride by our neighbors. We were spending our money in Mississippi and Tennessee and Georgia and Florida and other places, and Alabamians are going broke buying lottery tickets everywhere else, and our kids don't get the benefit of those the money that's sent over to these other states. But the Dana Jill Simpson gave sworn testimony to the House Judiciary Committee that Rove had said that he was going to get the Department of Justice to pursue me. I was brought to trial 1 month before my reelection campaign, but
back in 2002, you may remember, I went to bed winning the election.
Right.
I woke up at 4:30 in the morning, and the Republicans had, in one southern Alabama county had shifted about 6,700 votes from my column to my opponent's column. Mm-hmm. And
there was no question about that. That wasn't just talk. That they actually, you know, on the audit, you could see that it actually happened.
Absolutely.
But then, yeah, okay, absolutely. So now we have to get Don Siegelman out of the picture. Now, it wasn't just you. I happen to know a lot of these folks that were targeted. I knew you. You and I had known each other for a while. I knew the good work that you'd done in Alabama. I knew Paul Miner in Mississippi, who was targeted with a man by the name of Diaz. And once you found out what that was about, it was about the U.S. Justice Department being hustled by Karl Rove to engage in political targeting of people who were anti-Republican or in some way felt that the Republicans felt like you were in their way. And so the very fact that Fuller was even the judge and didn't recuse himself is problematic, isn't it?
Well, it was troublesome because we had an encounter back in 2002 when he was leaving the district attorney's office, going to the federal bench, and I had appointed someone whom was the political nemesis of Mark Fuller, and
right.
They had an altercation about his trying to raise the salary of one of his employees. Anyway, it was a rather embarrassing episode, I think, and for Mark.
Don, I have about 1 minute left, but I want to tell the listeners this. First of all, I know that it's painful to have to serve this time, but I hope in this process that the people listening to this program understand that a criminal, the real criminals are still out there. You understand? There's been no prosecution of Karl Rove for Iraq. There's been no prosecution of the Scooter Libby issue. There's been no prosecution for so many things. And innocent people today are in prison for no other reason other than politics. And Karl Rove drove so much of that. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. I'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Give me a call, 866-987-8466. I'll take your calls when we come back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. You know, I see Lieberman. Now, can you imagine Lieberman coming out and saying that Harry Reid went over the line with his statement about the fact that Mitt Romney has not paid taxes in 10 years? Now, this is a guy, Lieberman, who led the fight. If you really drill down on the Democrat side, he was a Democrat back then. If you really drill down on who was the guy who led the charge on behalf of killing Americans and killing Iraqis for a lie based on weapons of mass destruction that were never there, a lie based on the idea that this was an economic war, didn't have anything to do with democracy promotion in the Middle East. This is Lieberman, who today is saying Harry Reid went over the line with his attack on Mitt Romney. Really? I mean, really? You know, let me go to this caller. Let's go to Carmen in Hamilton, Montana. Carmen, are you there?
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been holding a long time, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Since you just mentioned Iraq, I have so many things to talk to you about. But since you just mentioned Iraq, I'm a three-tour combat veteran from Vietnam. I watched him lie us into every war since I've been alive. I'm 63 now, and I try to educate the kids around here, tell them, don't go in there. You're just going to compromise your religious beliefs for a bunch of people who are going to make profits who don't even pay taxes. You know, when we left Iraq, I don't know how many months later, a year and 3 months, when the oil companies dove in there that day, they got the oil for 67 cents a barrel. And it was a spot market. I think it was 110 on the spot market. They made about $300 trillion plus that day. And nobody's ever called them on it. I'd like to have $30 trillion to set our economy back on track because of all the blood we left in the sand over there. And because we went to war for lies from a little rich oil whore boy who wasn't even fit to be president. We need presidents that have 180 IQ and above. You know why? Because the rest of the world is competing with us. We don't need dummies in office anymore. We don't need religious nuts there. We don't need extremists there. I live in a valley of Mormons and Republicans here. It's very tough to watch, when I went to the Corvallis parade, them dragging the outhouse down the street saying that much for a good time, call Michelle and everything. They're all laughing and saying the N-word and everything. And it's all Mormons because there's a polygamous community right next to Corvallis called Pinesdale. And the rest of this town is run by all nothing but Republicans.
Yeah.
And,
well, look, can I tell you something? First of all, I'm in a similar area in Pensacola, Florida. And it is difficult. It's difficult for a thinking, rational progressive to live in an environment like that. But you have to understand things are turning around. And you know why they're turning around? They're turning around because 10 years ago, you didn't have the kind of exposure that a guy like Tom Hartman has or Ed Schultz or Randy Rhodes or any of the people who are out there with a progressive voice. The last time we were involved in a fight like we are right now, for example, we would only hear one side of the story. That is that Mitt Romney has given us all the information that he needs to as president of the United States. Okay? Now, it would have ended. That would have been the last of the discussion 20 years ago, for sure. But now what you have is you have citizens media that is taking the discussion beyond what traditional media usually does, which is nothing. So now it would be more difficult to gin up a war based on lies. It's more difficult for a guy like the little Lieberman to make such an outrageous statement that he's upset that Harry Reid has called Mitt Romney out. It would be more difficult for a Michelle Bachmann to race bait and hate talk without somebody answering that. And that's the good news. The good news is citizens media, the very fact that you're listening to this, to Tom's program, it's that citizens media that is going to turn around democracy. Citizens media, hopefully, will put us in a position where we can do away with Citizens United. And we can elect Obama again, and we can avoid having a Supreme Court stacked with political hacks. Because citizens media, like Tom's show, they're talking about issues like that. Let me go to Brian in Oregon. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
I've been listening to you for years on various shows. Terrific stuff. I just wanted to say we got to get the chum out of the water. These political sharks are coming for that chum, and that's the corporate lobby money. I think the reason we have this huge clown car of Republican candidates is coming out of the woodwork is to be elected for the huge earning potential that they get by winning elections. If they it's like winning the lottery for them. If we took the corporate lobby money out of the picture, we'd have less of these whack jobs in office or even running for office. This overbearing, ignorant bigotry and hatred is brought to bear by these clown car Republicans like Bachmann and Palin and Perry and Walker. They'd all go away if we overturned Citizens United and took the corporate lobby money out of the system.
Brian, the problem is the only way to make that happen is we have to do that. Nobody is going to do that for us. Right now, there are movements. There are serious movements that are taking places in states, in municipalities, in local governments that are saying, by God, we object to what this corporate Supreme Court has done. We object to this corporate majority that's trying to trash democracy. But it is, for all practical purposes, it is in our hands. And at this point, we either save it or it doesn't get saved. That's it for today's show. I'm Mike Papantoni. I want to thank my guests and all of my callers. And I want to thank Tom Hartman for letting me sit in. And now get out there, get active, Go out there and occupy something. As Tom would say, tag, you're it. I'm Mike Papantonio. I'll be talking to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.